Soul Sister Radio. Radio.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal's Journey to My Father's Palace. Destiny, coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to 4 International Soul Sister Radio. I am your producer, Maria DiGiovanni, welcoming you to the Soul Sister Experience. First, a special thank you to our station sponsor, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, who make it possible to record live and broadcast worldwide. We invite you to get ready to enjoy the show. Take it away, my Soul Sister.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. This is Tracy Murphy, and this is Safety First, and we're joined with my favorite co-host, Star Myers. Hey, Star.
Hi, how are you today? Good. Glad to be here. Excited for our guest tonight.
I know. Sandra Brown is our special guest tonight, and Sandra Brown has a very, very unique bit of wisdom, I should say, a wide amount of wisdom about mental health and how to help people in dangerous relationships. But you, Star, and I both have been in these relationships, and we identify with so much. And learning what Sandra Brown has put together for people out there, not only for survivors, but for advanced training in mental health certification with addictions and through law enforcement and judicial professionals in psychopathology and personality disorders. She's got an real amount of work behind her that she has done to receive these certifications. Sandra Brown, I want to welcome you and say thank you for joining us here on Safety First. As you know, we've put this show together in honor of Susan Murphy Milano, and we do a lot of awareness and education for other people by bringing on special guests. But basically, bottom line is we want people to know what DocumentTheAbuse.com is, what the evidentiary abuse is all about. And we talk about Susan putting together and creating this website, but really it's Susan and you that have put together this website. And I just want to say something so our audience is aware that you are the other half of DocumentTheAbuse.com. And when somebody does want to know more, they can still reach you and get a hold of you and the work that you put out there. Sandra, you're here with us, right?
Yes. Thank you for having me tonight. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm just really excited because your work is priceless. And even when Susan was teaching me things, she really said that she learned so much from you and your knowledge. And that's what I want to share with people about is where your area of expertise is and what you do out there.
Well, the Institute for Relational Harm Reduction is the name of our program, and it is a public pathology education program and a resource for survivors. And the reason Susan and I hooked up was because the focus of the Institute is a little bit different than your traditional domestic violence model. We are focused on the mental health aspects of the perpetrator in terms of the level of pathology, which increases their dangerousness and also limits their ability to benefit from counseling, anger management, or batter intervention. And so I guess to that extent, our focus is really on the most dangerous cases that are not always identified as that. Domestic violence in general tends to put perpetrators, you know, in one category to deal with them and treatment, whereas we sort of differentiated that and looked at some of the patterns of behavior that elevated the risk level for their survivors and for society in general. So Susan and I hooked up based on that because, of course, she worked the cases, perpetrator, you know, cases that fit that category. People weren't going to, you know, contact her because they had been slapped one time. That's not the background of the people. So she very much was dealing with the same population as we were dealing with.
And it seems to me like you're explaining you work with the mental aspect of it, where in Susan's case she was working for their safety per se. And the way that those two really, the physical safety is what I mean, those two really go together very well because if you don't have that knowledge and that understanding in which you're explaining, it really does keep you at a level of danger.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other, you know, part of what we do is, you know, working with the survivors in their own recovery and dealing with their mental health and dealing with their aftermath symptoms. But a big piece of that with the mental health with the survivors is also for them to understand the pathology involved with their partner, the inability of that partner to get well, and for the reasons and why their risk level was so high with a partner that had impulse control problems and were the most likely to seriously injure or kill, and why.
Exactly. And not understanding that would make sense why the statistics say that a woman goes back 7 or 8 times to that relationship.
Exactly. Because they don't have the information about what, you know, which batters can change and which can't and why.
Right. And understanding those disorders that often get overlooked in society.
Exactly. I worked in a batter shelter for a short period of time, and I had a lady in group one night, and I looked at her chart, and it was her 7th or 8th time, you know, back in the shelter, not with the same partner, but picking the same type of partner, you know, over and over again. And I asked her one night, I said, you know, I know that if you knew the answer directly to this, you wouldn't be in here again, but let me just throw it out there. You know, obviously we haven't given you the tools that you need in order to have a better pattern of selection in these relationships so that you haven't been in here 7 or 8 times. Part of that is a failure on our part educationally to help you. So, you know, if there was something that we needed to teach you in order to stop this pattern, what would it be? And she said, well, I guess I need to know how to spot a dangerous man before I get involved. And that night, I went home and I wrote a book outline and sold it in 1 week. And the book, How to Spot a Dangerous Man Before You Get Involved, you know, came out a few months later. And it was the beginning of understanding that the necessity of pathology education and helping people be able to identify the dangerousness, hopefully before they got involved, but at the very least while they were involved, and why batter intervention treatment does not work for everybody.
Wow. So on what I'm hearing on that is, at the request from a victim or survivor's mouth, you are hearing somebody hungry for this information. And you knew deep down that you needed to come up with this solution.
Well, I had been in practice for 15 years before that. We had run a trauma disorder center where I had worked with survivors before. And, you know, I had handouts and materials that, you know, I had given to survivors before about pathology and you know, which partners could and could not get well. But once that woman said that in group, I thought, I need to rally all of these resources together and put together, you know, a book or a program or whatever. And that was sort of the beginning, which we've done. And that was sort of the beginning part of it and how I think Susan and I sort of migrated to each other because she was very much, you know, working with the survivors. Like you said, the physical the physical part of it where we were working a lot on the pathology education, the mental health part.
Wow, that's just so important. And how many people are missing that understanding? And I can see how when she was explaining to me, and this was before I knew who you were and knew the work that you were doing, you know, I could just sense what she was saying is Sandra's information is very valuable.
I think that's a big piece of it is that our success rate has largely been connected to the level of pathology understanding, that when people understand that a lot of the disorders that are associated with this level of violence are not things that can always be treated. You know, our country has had too much Oprah, you know, the kumbaya-ness, blah, blah, blah. If you can think it, you can make it better. You know, everyone can change. People just have to be motivated to change. And in mental health, that is not true. In the field of neuroscience, there is hard wiring in some of the batter's brains that does not change. And this is exactly, you know, what makes them dangerous. You know, OJ has been, you know, he makes my job so easy. You know,
he's tormented with all of these legal actions and things that have gone on. He's tormenting those families, and it just like we're talking about with this person, this personality that will never change, or these traits that will never change. It makes me ill inside to know he doesn't care. He has no empathy for the pain he has put through. Just both of the families, the Browns and the Goldmans.
I think he's such a classic example of, you know, he had problems before Nicole, then he had problems all through Nicole, then the murder, then all the, there were other domestic violence charges after that. And he's such a good example of, you know, a chronically disordered, you know, batterer whose behaviors never change. In fact, you know, they continue to escalate, and that nothing, deters that. If he got out tomorrow, he'd be right back at it. But it was those kinds of cases that spurred, you know, both Susan and I about creating, Susan created the evidentiary abuse affidavit, but in us trying to bring attention to the kinds of cases that really needed that level of documentation for safety reasons. And OJ is such a great example of why every person that ever came in his path should have had one.
Right.
I mean, he's...
Right.
When you're saying
that he's going to do the same thing when he gets out, or if he gets out, the thing is, he's been doing it the whole time. He's been doing it inside. He's been doing it... He's a sick man in so many ways that have been overlooked. And even this last case, it's just absolutely pathetic that he has no regard, no compassion. And that's, I think, one of the biggest red flags in any relationship is when you get that sense that person doesn't feel for other things.
Well, I mean, that is, you know, what psychopaths do. And he certainly falls within, you know, that category of antisocial, sociopath, or psychopathic with his level of reduced empathy, conscience, and his impulse control problems. And so, you know, in the beginning, they don't look like that. They're very charming, and I'm sure he was too in the beginning. And it isn't until later in the relationship where people start getting glimpses of that reduced empathy. But we've done a poor job in this country about educating people about pathology and what reduced conscience really means, what low empathy means and does. And he's,
exactly.
You know, he's a walking billboard for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that this
mm-hmm.
is not just a batterer. This is a psychopath, you know, that is capable of injuring and killing people. And that at the worst levels of low empathy, is that's what that is. Not just a batterer, but a killer.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I would you say that not all cases need to be a physically battering situation?
No, absolutely. No, not all of them do batter.
Right.
No, absolutely not. And a lot of times, you know, the higher the white collar aspect of their lives, the more they're not going to risk the battering, that a lot of it is, you know, emotional, financial, spiritual, that they do. But it is
mm-hmm.
still a level of callousness, the kinds of things that are done, that is still an example of low empathy, even if there's no battering involved. Over half of the women who come through the Institute have never been battered, and yet they have post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, from the abusive relationship, even without
right.
battering. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
Now, Sandra, we have a question from the chat room.
Okay.
The question that was asked is, do all psychopaths have personality disorders, and what if they don't have a personality disorder?
That is a personality disorder. So that's what that is, yes. The DSM doesn't list it that way. They've gone round and round about the language to associate with psychopaths. In the DSM, they refer to it as the term antisocial personality disorder. We've worked at trying to get a broader view of that, because the DSM and the antisocial personality disorder looks at mostly criminal behavior, but as we
right.
just said, not all of them are highly criminal, but they are personality disorders and more.
Mm-hmm. And because of it not being recognized, it's been getting to the point now that these serious injuries or deaths are occurring, I believe. would you say?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And especially in white-collar cases where there isn't a lot of criminal behavior. You know, they go from not having a domestic violence rap sheet or that kind of thing to killing. Look at Scott Peterson. You know, he had nothing, you know. So, but, and I think the white-collar psychopaths are the ones that often fly under the radar. Robert Hare and Paul Babiak wrote that great book, Snakes in Suits, which is about the rise of white-collar psychopathy in this country. And Robert Hare, who works in the Canadian prison system, said that if he was going to study psychopaths, he would not go to the prisons to study that population. He would go to Wall Street.
That's right.
And,
Wow. Well, our congressmen are setting a great example for our mayors, I should say.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think, and that's, you know, a really great example of white-collar guys with perpetual impulse control problems who keep doing the wiener thing, you know, over and over and over again, just like O.J. did, only, you know, in a slightly different venue and with slightly different behavior.
Well, we didn't have the technology then either, or he would have been all over that Internet on the social network.
But it is likely the same set, you know, of disorders that are at the base of that. I mean, the guy's got to have a personality disorder. I mean, I would bet my bottom dollar on it if anyone ever tested him, because that's the behaviors that people who have personality disorders, you know, that's what they do. When we say, who does that? When we're outraged at, you know, the behavior, who does that? And very often we are talking about this cluster of disorders, narcissists, antisocial, psychopaths.
And, you know, let's explain that a little bit just for people that really don't have that understanding, you know, that it's a cluster of personality disorders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear, you know, cluster B. That cluster B is those categories. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, there's three categories of personality disorders, and that cluster B is the one that tends to, have the most violence associated with it. In fact, they call it the dramatic and erratic cluster of disorders, and that pretty much, you know, defines their behavior. It is dramatic and it is erratic. It includes the disorders of borderline personality disorder, narcissistic, antisocial, and then what is not listed in the DSM, but we include in that category, is the sociopath and psychopath. And so all of those are that cluster that is most associated with repeat domestic violence offending and the most violent crimes. In fact, Donald Dutton, who's a domestic violence researcher, said 85% of repeat offenders that have offended more than one time fall in the cluster B category.
Don't say it. A break time?
Yeah. I know. The time flies. There's a lot of action going on in the chat room. And the person who had asked the question was letting us know that the 16-year-old that she was asking the question about, the psychopath, rated higher than most any of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we were going to break away for a commercial.
Oh, no, it is commercial, but I just wanted to tell you that before I forgot, because we've been typing back and forth, and, yeah, he killed the 14-year-old, the 16-year-old did, but he rated higher than most psychopaths do on the testing.
There you go.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Soul Sister Radio.
Whoever believes in me will do the same works I have done, and even greater works. This wasn't lip service. Jesus was talking to you. Every Soul Sister Friday at 10 a.m., learn how to claim your God-given dominion to follow the Master's example and restore health, demonstrate supply, harmonize relationships, and have victory over sin with Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson. Spiritual solutions to life's challenges.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the Advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Now a message from our sponsor, EducateEtiquette.com. Have you ever been at a table with a group of people and there is one person being rude on their cell phone? Have you mentioned it to that person and they still do it as if they just don't care as much for those around them in the flesh as they do for their own personal thread on Facebook? It's even worse when you're around our older generation who really have a hard time understanding how people can form relationships this way. There is wisdom in their thinking, so please don't be rude. Put it away in respect. Yourself, most of all. Thank you for joining us on Soul Sister Enterprise, and please visit us at www.educateetiquette.com.
Soul Sister Radio.
Hello, and welcome back. We've still got Sandra Brown with us from Relational Harm, and I want to take this second before we start in and thank our sponsors. Our show sponsors, that would be Brame.biz, Imagine Publicity, Voice and Amplified, and our station sponsors, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, 4 International, Spa Gym, DMB Builders.
Thank you, Star.
And I really want to thank Sandra for coming on tonight. There is just so much that I think we'd like to know. I know we had a couple more questions, but I'd like to hear more about what we were talking about before.
Well, we were talking about the cluster of disorders that are associated most with this. And Donald Dutton, who is a domestic violence researcher, you know, had indicated that 85% of repeat offenders in domestic violence are likely to have a cluster B disorder. And the more times that they repeat in the offending, the higher that percentage goes up. And that's been, you know, a big issue for us at the Institute, trying to bring awareness to the courts that we do know who does this. We do know who's most likely to offend. We do know, you know, with cluster B disorders, why they are the ones that don't do well in batter intervention or anger management or probation, or, you know, that we do have some risk indicators, you know, associated with this that could be utilized better in prevention. And so that cluster of disorder are the ones, you know, really sort of under the microscope now, really taking a look at the disorders and their contribution to the issue of violence and reoffending.
Right, safety. Safety first, I think. I'm sorry about my hoarse voice. I'm kind of battling a cold, so I excuse my hoarseness. And anyway, so Star, what do you think? I mean, Star, Sandra, what do you think that that people could be aware of? What would be just some off the top red flags, would you say? If, let's say, you're in a relationship that's questionable, that maybe you have doubt in, or let's say you're interested in finding somebody to date, what would you say would be something to keep your eyes peeled for?
Well, patterns, you know, and it takes time to be able to figure out patterns, and that a lot of people don't give the dating process, they don't go slow enough. One of the things we do know about what these people do is that they date rapidly, you know, and try to increase the sensation of emotional attachment and intimacy very, very quickly. You know, this is not McDonald's. This isn't a drive-through where you can find out information about someone's history that way. And the pacing of the relationship, when these people are trying to hurry up that sense of attachment, that's a red flag, because we hear it a million times that most of these people moved quickly, either in the emotional attachment or in the physical attachment, in terms of moving in to together, et cetera. And that there is not enough time to be able to follow patterns in relationships. And the patterns are the indicators of, you know, behaviors that are likely to repeat. And if you don't have the benefit of that, you're going to end up with somebody likely that's problematic, and you have not had the opportunity to track the patterns. So for me,
would you say that would be the tactic, is to move quickly into a relationship?
Yes, so absolutely.
They can't have that opportunity to learn those patterns.
Right, exactly. And I mean, we've had people say that, in anger management, batter intervention, I've had psychopaths in group before, and, you know, the whole thing is for women to hurry up and bond. And so they will, you know, turn the heat up on the relationship, you know, into 24/7. You know, as she's known him 2 days, and, you know, she hasn't been away from him. Exactly. And that's a red flag. That's a huge red flag, because that's what we find connected to a lot of these relationships, and that there is an MO, you know, associated with that. And, you know, a lot of these guys also talk about, you know, the best way to increase the sensation of bonding without the time involved in true bonding is to get her talking. And so women over-disclose and rapidly disclose, and they do that 24/7 thing that, you know, if I spend 100 hours with him in 1 week, and I've told him, you know, everything that's ever happened to me in my whole life, that in that 100 hours, that is the equivalent, you know, of 6 or 8 months of once-a-week dating. That's not how it works, but he hopes you think that's how it works. And that, you know, we sort of chastise the women for having what we call verbal bulimia, where
they say throwing up on yourself or something.
Yeah.
You say, oh, there's so many women, they'll just start puking all over themselves.
Yes. Over-disclose and rapidly disclose. And, you know, I've had psychopaths in groups that, you know, grin and just say, all I have to do is sit back and listen. And
that's
then
right.
all
make
I can do,
mental notes.
Right, and parrot back and reflect back and mirror back everything she just said, and she hands it to me on a plate, what I need to know about her.
Right. Isn't that interesting, though, to understand that that's really what it is? They're taking mental notes. They're learning your patterns. They're learning how you feel about things. And what was the word? Mirrored back those behaviors to.
Exactly, because we feel like, bonding happens in mirroring. I mean, that's what we do with an infant. We coo back to them. We mirror back to them. I mean, that's how people feel like they're on the same page and they connect. Well, psychopaths are born with that sixth sense. They already know that. They're little human psychologists. They know exactly what they need to do in order to do that. One time I was in group and I said, I had a couple guys in there that I suspected were psychopaths. And I said, what would you warn women of? What should they know? And he said to shut up, stop telling everything about yourself. That's all we have to do is sit there and take mental notes, and you're done. Because we've been doing this for 20 or 30 years, and, we are sicker than you are smart. And
now,
you're
where does this knowledge come from? Where do they learn this? Is this learned behavior? Do they come from trauma? Okay. Do they come from, maybe very painful experiences or brain traumas, or where does the personality disorder, you think, come from?
Well, there's a mixture of things. It's not always one source. It's nature and nurture. So there are neurological abnormalities associated with that cluster of disorders. Some of it is neuro issues. Some of them do have early childhood trauma, but most of them are just little human psychologists that have learned early on to pay attention about what works in trying to manipulate other people. Those kinds of disorders are developed in early childhood, so they've been, learning how to manipulate people since they were children. So by the time you're dating them at 30, they've been at it 20-some years.
Yes, exactly. Right. That's what's so scary. Yes.
This is Maria, the producer. Hi, Sandra. I've got a question, and it has to do with our system. What is being claimed as domestic violence when it really isn't? It is about mental health. And, Tracy, you're going to know what case I'm talking about. A friend of mine came to me a year ago concerned about her 20-year-old son, that she was afraid that he was going to kill her, and she has been trying desperately to get him help. She ended up getting him to move in with his father, and 3 weeks ago he ended up murdering the stepmother. And they're claiming that it's domestic violence, but truly it isn't. However, all the help that this mother tried to get her son, a week before he did this, the state said that there was nothing wrong with him except for anxiety. Now, what do we do in a case like this, and what kind of mentality are we talking about when our best people of the state are claiming that this poor kid only had anxiety, when it's definitely something more than that?
Well, anxiety comes from wrong.
Well, there's a lot wrong, and let's start with what's wrong in the domestic violence system. It is the domestic violence system and their theories that don't want to talk about mental health as an issue involved in domestic violence. They don't want it. And they are powerful lobbyers, you know, in domestic violence theory. If there was any other mental health theory that had not evolved since the 1970s, like the domestic violence theory has been, it would not be accepted. And yet domestic violence, the thing they always say about our books, our programs, our products, is that, you know, it gives the perpetrator an out by associating a mental health disorder with the behavior. Well, I'm sorry, that's how the brain is. That's how disorders work, that there are disorders associated with violent behavior, and ignoring it and thinking that it does a discredit to your theory does not help looking at some of the most dangerous mentally disordered perpetrators. And yet any time you're in a domestic violence training and you bring that up, that's what you will hear back from the domestic violence community, is they do not want to hear any of the mental health stuff associated with the perpetrator. So this is what we get. So you end up with people who have the potential for violence, you know, that fly under the radar until they've murdered somebody.
And then we wonder why we have such issues in the custody court battles that go on.
Right. Exactly, because they want to separate behavior from mental health. That
and
if you hurt someone, there's nothing else that's going on. You're just an abuser. You're just, well, since when does our brain as an organ or our mind as a psychological structure get removed from our body? You can't separate that when it is a factor. I mean, can any of us say Charlie Manson doesn't have mental health issues? He's schizophrenic and psychopathic, and that is part of the consideration about how he ended up doing what he did. And, the same thing exists, even worse, with younger people, adolescents and their young 20s, that the courts, even if they do a mental eval, nobody wants to label these children as being psychopathic. Nobody wants to be the bad guy and say, wow, we got a problem here. This kid's going to, you know, go off. No one wants to label them. You know, they don't want to straddle them with this horrible label for that's going to follow them around. But, no, you know, on the other hand, someone has to go toe tag the body.
Exactly.
Right. Well,
yeah.
Along with the parents, it's how that whole thing really, it's so sad, because with this system that's set in place now and not having what we're talking about included in all these cases, I think it contributes to all the murder-suicides.
Well, absolutely. We just can't extract mental health, you know, from the equation when so much of what happens in these cases is related to impulse control problems, which are not merely behavioral. Our hands don't go and kill somebody, you know, apart from our brain.
That's right.
So, yeah, exactly. So, that is a big part of the problem. And, you know, honestly, the domestic violence community has perpetrated a lot of this by insisting that the behavior be looked at it independent of the mental health.
I agree. I agree. I think the mental health aspect of it, it ends up being, when we're talking about the cases, the murder-suicide, that mental health ends up becoming the result of, you find out later. It's time to finding out before.
Right. And then everybody says, oh, my gosh, why didn't you see it? You know, why didn't you see it? And sometimes the perpetrator, you know, was in anger management or was in batter intervention or was in mental health counseling or whatever.
Okay. But, Sandra, in the case of Brame up in Tacoma, Washington, who was the chief of police, who ended up killing his wife and himself, they even with the test that this officer took, he should never have been an officer. And this is such a problem in law enforcement. And so even when the signs are all up, what is going wrong with our system that they're still overlooking it? Is it because it's the name mental health? And if it is, then shouldn't we come up with something else to change that stigma?
Well, first of all, I mean, the whole issue about pathology is so poorly taught, you know, in graduate school. I mean, most people only get a really small amount of it. And these are still the psychologists, you know, with law enforcement teams that are involved often in developing the mental health guidelines for hiring. They are the same people who had poor training, you know, in graduate school. Until pathology education becomes far-reaching in the mental health field, in the education field, in a lot of fields, in the courts to understand it, this is kind of, the fallout from it. And let's also not overlook that the military and law enforcement often look for certain qualities of pathology to roll in to hire.
Well, that's a scary thought.
Well, I mean, let's look at it. In military, they do psych testing. I've talked to military psychologists before, off the record, who said we look for a certain level of pathology, that they need to have a little or a medium amount of pathology, that they can go out in the field and kill somebody, especially in special ops, and not develop post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, you have to have a reduced empathy, reduced conscience. That there's some factors that need to exist that prevent you from being extremely traumatized. And in the military, especially in special ops, those guys are a little strange, and there's a reason they are, because they're looking for that. I'm not so sure that's not happening in law enforcement to an unspoken degree, which would give us a clue about why there's so many officer-related homicides of their own family.
Right, and so many officers that actually do have PTSD.
Yeah, which also causes, yes, erratic kind of behavior. Susan Murphy Milano's, you know, story is, you know, a really great example of that. I don't know he had PTSD. He looked much more pathological, you know, in his history of everything he had done to that family leading up to that. But it is an issue between PTSD and just random pathology, because, you know, a lot of the narcissists, a lot of sociopaths are drawn to positions of power, and they pick careers that are associated, you know, with the concept of power in law enforcement, you know, attorneys, law enforcement. It's always, you know,
I don't see why a person with a personality disorder couldn't have PTSD as well.
Absolutely.
Seems like a ticking time bomb out right there.
Yeah.
And there's some of the borderline personality disorder is much more prone to having PTSD than narcissism, and psychopaths don't really have high levels of PTSD. But most psychopaths have other mental health problems. You know, it's not just, you know, one mental health issue. It's often multiple issues. But I think what we're seeing, you know, in a lot of these court cases are all indicators, all pointing to the lack of pathology and
the psychology
field. Yeah, and in the court system. And mm-hmm. the judges are the ones making decisions without having this information.
Absolutely. Well, you know, let's talk about then where people can find you. If they want to learn more about what you're doing and, let's say, sign up for your newsletter, which is absolutely phenomenal, and we would love to post about your Safe Relationships magazine, where can people find you?
They can
because
go.
Because I know you don't use your name on Facebook, so they're not going to find you if they go typing in Sandra Brown.
No, our website is saferelationshipsmagazine.com. You can find us on Facebook at Relational Harm Reduction. And you can find our books, How to Spot a Dangerous Man and Women Who Love Psychopaths, on our website or on Amazon.
Okay, great. Your books, now, the How to Spot a Dangerous Man, that came first, and that was inspired by the story you told us.
Yeah. Well,
About your client.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, these sound like really great shows, really great books. And Star, you can post those in the chat room for people, too, so they can find them.
That's what I'm doing right now.
See, Star is the best co-host. She just rules that chat room, I'll tell you.
Except that I was locked. I got kicked out of chat room for a while. I got put in timeout for posting okay too many times.
Oh, you're kidding. I love the rules.
Tracy, you have 1 minute. Sandra, it was great having you. But go ahead, Tracy, close out. Star, you are brilliant working with Star. So go ahead and close out. You have 1 minute.
Well, thank you, Sandra, first of all. I mean, this has just been an awakening experience, and I appreciate you taking the time with us. Your work is powerful.
Thank you.
And you offer training for the evidentiary abuse affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And then go ahead.
Yeah, and people can find out more information on the documentTheAbuse.com website, or they can contact us through Safe Relationships Magazine. We do training on that as well as a different type of training through the Institute for Mental Health Therapists, learning how to adopt our model of care for treating survivors.
And I think that's what's so crucial, and I will support you all the way on that. And on that note, just thank you so much. We will all be in touch, and thank you for joining us. Come back again. We'll talk more anytime you want.
I will. Thank you for having me.
I want to thank Sandra for being on with us today.
Radio.
You've got
it?
20 seconds. You got 20 seconds. Hurry up.
Yeah,
okay.
Kind of
I
want to
thank our listeners and our sponsors, and please join us next week. We have Leela Albert, family advocate. And thank you again, because without you, we wouldn't be here.
So thank you so much. All right. Talk to you guys later. Safety
we'll
first
see you
with
next
Murphy's
week
Law.
On Safety
Bye-bye.
First with Murphy's Law.
Soul Sister Radio.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sister Enterprise, the law office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.
I was a dead man, out in the cold. Life was a pit and I was deep in a hole, just about to give up. Then lo and behold, a voice from within said, save your soul. Yo, brothers and sisters all around the globe, I got a story, word. Gotta be told to my family, friends, fans, even my foes. It's like this, y'all, this is how it goes. I was out in the world without a name or a goal, huh? Out of school and out of control. Set in my ways, yeah, stuck in the mold. And going the wrong way down a one-way road. Young and bold, I didn't wanna be told. I used to steal and brag about the stuff I stole. Then one bright day, my mind got blown when a voice from within said, save your soul. No, I didn't want to be told. Things were looking up and I was on a roll. I was a rude boy and a Romeo, and anywhere I went I started the show. I had money, woman, plenty of gold, and an overinflated EGO. I was a dead man, but I didn't know until a voice from within said, save your soul. A movie, and I was playing the role of a black youth living in the ghetto, where the action was, that's where I'd go. Right or wrong, I'll be going with the flow, but what you reap is what you sow. It's like karma, the bad you do will follow you around, and I was going down, right down, with my face in the ground, two hands bound to a siren sound, none of my so-called friends anywhere to be found. As I thought to myself, in life you're alone, a voice from within said, anyone home? Yes, Lord, well here I be, if I ain't ready yet, I will never be. I'm sorry for the things that I did before, believe me, Lord, I won't do them no more. I'll be an arrow, if you will be my bow, and anywhere I'm sent, I'll gladly go. I'll be a witness all around the world to every man, every woman, every boy and girl. Cause I was born in the ghetto with a strong survive and with a will to strive. I began to rise from 79, or was it 75? When reggae music began to open my eyes about the truth, the right, Jah the Most High, and how to achieve that little pie in the sky. Inspirated, yeah, I was totally motivated. To the further I decided to chat the mic, but my direction was not to only those of my complexion, but the brown, yellow, red, and the white man. Critics criticize, cynics cynicize, any entertainer with a message they victimize. But in this world I've sinned, it's no surprise. So with the media I sympathize. I hear the rich man's laughter, hear the poor man's cries. Hypocrites sabotage their lies through their eyes. Everyone's born, most of us die, but only God's children get the prize. Don't be a fool, be cool, come on and get wise. Yeah, wise up, no compromise. And listen to the voice that resides within your mind. Cause God has sent a guide to all mankind. Choice is yours, life above or death below. It's up to you to save your soul. Life is what you make it. If you see an opportunity, Jah know you better take it. And don't you mistake it, and don't you fake it, no. The golden rule, don't you break it. See, life can be a fantasy or a reality.
to vanity. It's insanity. Come show some love for humanity. My name is Fatima. Like the Matrix, you've got to free up your mind and get back to basics. It's in your genealogy and your psychology, and no man can erase it. There's a natural mystic blowing in the air, yeah. Science cannot trace it, but I can feel it, hear it, see it, smell it. I can even taste it. My name is Fatima Banza.
There's no way out, and you're going alone. wonder. But God's proven time and time again, He'll take care of you, and He'll do it again. Oh, yes, He can do it again. If you would just take a look at where. You're going through, and He knows how you're hurting. You see, He knows just how your heart has been broken too. For He's the God of the stars and of the sun and of the sand, and He is your Father. You see, He can calm the storms. He'll find some way to fix this for you.
Come back again. tell all your friends, man.
What's this?
Every man come listen, this one from the article land is a part of Bantan. Coming in strong with a positive summertime vibration. Cause in the winter me can't take the cold, but the start shiver when the breeze start low. Car can't start cause the engine cold, can't move me fingers, can't feel me toes. But in the summer when the sun a shine bright up, kick up me boot, put on me a knife up, leave me car and jump on me bike. And this kind of weather I like. Nice and slow.
In a rat race. But if I could, I would just slow down the pace. Like a record on a deck, switch the speed from 45 down to 33. Oh, nice and slow. Sun a shine and the breeze a blow. Oh, nice and easy. Just a chill with my friends and family.
I can't imagine anything that's better.
No way.
The world is not forever.
That's right.
There ain't no place I'd like to be better. Moving on the summer's afternoon.
Making it nice and easy. Moving it nice and slow.
Achieve success. Everyone goes through some farmer stress. The rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief. Lion and the doctor, even the priest. Some people take a trip to the beach to get a little stress relief. Take a picnic down to the park with my children and my sweetheart. Oh yes, I have to confess, the summertime vibes are the best. People, if you agree, I'm part of Bantan, come follow me.
Moving it nice and easy, moving it nice and slow.
An experience is good when it heightens the appreciation of beauty, augments the moral will, enhances the discernment of truth, enlarges the capacity to love and serve one's fellows, exalts the spiritual ideals, and unifies the supreme human motives of time with the eternal plans of the indwelling adjuster, all of which lead directly to an increased desire to do the Father's will, thereby fostering the divine passion to find God and to be more like Him.
Radio.